Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand today. Wow, the Dow is on fire. We're going to talk with John Najarian about that. It has passed 21,000 for the first time that I can remember, I think, at all. And NASDAQ is up over 6,000, which is just remarkable in itself. It's Money Smart Week again. We're going to have some great information about all of the different programs going on for free this week. Sponsored by the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, we've got Tracy Verzell, who's the Executive Director of the Economic Awareness Council, coming on the show a little bit later on. Andrew Herman from DNA Info is going to be here. And then a special treat, Yong Gong Chung, who is the CEO of Focal Point Data Risk, a cybersecurity management firm, going to talk about identity theft and some of the things we should be on the watch for, which is pretty great. It's 12:12. Let's go to John Najarian now. John, you must be just incredibly busy today.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week, and we're only 2 days into it.
Right.
But it's fantastic to have this kind of activity. You're right.
So is it because consumer confidence is so high? I know it's down a little bit from the all-time, or not all-time high, but really a record high of 124 down to 120. But we're seeing these record numbers. What is going on? Tell me what you see.
Well, yesterday, of course, most of it would be attributed to the elections in France over the weekend, that instead of being a catalyst for more risk and more trepidation out of investors and investment managers, quite frankly, it was just the opposite. It more or less cleared the path. So instead of having North Korea and or Iran or Syria or any of the other things that have percolated onto the radar of risk, instead we had a clearing of that with a more or less center-of-the-road candidate, at least by French politics, and that was viewed very positively. Got the nice rally yesterday. More talk about tax reform that we're supposed to hear more of tomorrow, that being potentially a 15% corporate tax rate and so forth. So that has continued that rally today. And, boy, some fantastic earnings out of the likes of Caterpillar and a number of others over the past 24 hours.
Yeah, it was exciting to hear about Caterpillar. They've had some problems with the Fed coming in, and it seems like maybe that's going to smooth it over and be okay. I want to go back to the elections for a moment. I know that Ivanka Trump is in Germany today, and she's meeting with the leaders there. But, you know, when the elections go, it's kind of interesting in France. I mean, we've got a center-right kind of candidate. He's interesting. Marine Le Pen, though, also a strong showing. Is it that the French people are saying, or maybe the world markets are saying, well, either of those would be okay with us?
Well, not so much. I mean, I think most of the markets would, in fact, be nervous if Ms. Le Pen was perceived as a leader, not the leader of the country, but I mean, a leader in the polling and so forth. Instead, she is not. She is trailing badly in a two-person field. And so that's, I think, at least why we're seeing the market respond the way it does and the way it has. And she's stepping down as the head of the National Front, perhaps to get that greater role within the government with Mr. Macron. And that will be another positive as far as the way that the transition of power is being viewed, instead of being something that's, again, a catalyst for worry. It's just going to be better than it was under Hollande, and that's better for Europe, certainly better for France.
All right, so let's turn to the tax decrease for a moment, because a 15% corporate tax, where would that put us comparatively with other countries that have lower corporate tax rates?
Right in line with the best areas of the world. The lowest of the major is probably Ireland. I believe that's 12 or 12.5%. But it puts us in line more with many of the developed countries with the way they tax corporations. And if we actually collect it instead of just letting them charge too much off against it, Elise, then I think it's a real positive as well. Hopefully that is coupled with some encouragement to repatriate that several $1 trillion that are overseas. And again, those kinds of things would get investors and voters pretty excited. Hopefully we do have victories on both those fronts. That would be fantastic news, and that would mean the market has more upside from here.
And do you feel like that is that we're going to see any pullback before we move forward again? You know, we've had quite a bit of a jump this week.
Well, I think the other catalyst for that, again, pullback or at least pause would be the negotiations about around the extension of the debt limit in the United States. So if we can get that CR through without having to shut down government, that's going to be viewed, again, as a positive. If instead that becomes something that the continuing resolution is not going to pass, that would be, I think, more or less a time when people would pull money out of the market, not wholesale, but I think it would be, after this furious run, an excuse for people to take profits.
Fantastic. John, thank you so much for your insights. It's a hugely busy day, I'm sure, for you, so we're going to let you go back to it. But thanks for joining us here on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
It's always a pleasure, Elise. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. Today, you can find me online, thinkglink.com, at Glink on Twitter. On my website this week, we put up 7 quick and easy ways to save more money in 1 hour. No fooling. 1 whole hour. You can get that kind of stuff if you sign up for my free weekly newsletter. We've got great Money Smart Week stuff coming up. But right now, Andrew Herman stopped by. He's senior editor at DNA Info. He is in studio. Hey, Andrew.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
Good seeing you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming inside on this beautiful, sunny, warm day.
Right.
I wish we could do broadcasting outside. I'm going to have to talk to the management about that. So you've got some good stuff going on. Tell me about Residence Building has an in-house musician. What is that?
Right. So, you know, downtown and around the city, there are 31 residential towers being built. We're number one in the country
in terms of... It's just unbelievable.
Right. And so we're adding 6,000 units this year. Not all of them rental. Some of them are condos. But the housing market, the high-rise housing market is booming, and there's a bit of competition out there.
Well, so, that's interesting.
Yeah, so they these new towers, they have to provide some interesting amenities. And as you say, the exhibit building at 165 West Superior is offering a musician in residence. And what they've done is they had a little contest in which people competed to be the musician in residence. And the prize was you got a year's free rent. And the winner was Jeremy Gentry. He is a 21-year-old college student and musician. And so for the next year, he's going to live in the building, and he's going to live rent-free, which is absolutely fabulous
for
college students or not college students. But he has to perform for 8 hours a week for the people who live in the building, in the common areas. So he's got a great gig there, and it's just interesting how, you know, now we have competition for rents.
Well, it is interesting. So that's very unusual to have a musician who's playing. But, but it actually speaks to a larger trend that we're seeing in the real estate world, which is rental buildings are creating, it's almost like dorms for grownups. So you had WeWork, which created WeLive, which is where you have this kind of congregate living that has all these kinds of social activities and services for usually young 20-somethings who are looking to live and work near their peers. And now you're seeing this, a similar sort of focus on what can we give to tenants to make them come in and rent from us in these beautiful new buildings at a higher price point.
Yeah, so this is a sort of vertical communities being built, I guess.
Yeah, it really is.
I was reading the other day about in Europe, they're actually building dormitories for adults, that there are shared, you know, shared kitchen facilities, shared bathrooms. Part of the problem over there is congestion and not enough housing, but people apparently can live this way.
No, it's very interesting. All right, let's go on to some of your other stories. Giant movie theaters, what's going on there?
Well, so this is the patio theater in Portage Park. It's one of these gems, these old movie palace gems that are sprinkled around the city.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, the one downtown Chicago Theater obviously is the king of them, but you see them all over town. The Congress in Logan Square is being rehabbed. The Davis Theater in Lincoln Square recently reopened. There's the Portage Theater in Portage, and there's also the Patio Theater on Irving Park Road in Portage Park. And they are sort of a work in progress. They're still trying to build a business, you know, build a business using new programming. So what they've done for this weekend is the Sci-Fi Spectacular, 14 hours of science fiction movies for $20.
Ooh, I like that.
So you can go there and see Mothra versus Godzilla, and Road Warrior is among the two more well-known movies. But they have some rarities like Invasion of the Moon Doodle, Lazy Werewolf, and something called Unspeakable Teens.
Okay, well, it's going to rain all weekend, so now we know what we're doing.
There you go. You can go up there and...
It's like the Wilmette Theater has done some live programming, and it's really nice to see sort of the reinvention of these kinds of places, because they can be really wonderful places to go for community.
Yes, the Congress Theater in Logan Square has been very bad for a very long time, and now
cleaning it up.
Millions are being spent, and they're great venues to go to.
All right, well, we just have a moment left, but I love this last story. Woman develops lipstick with light in mirror.
Yeah.
Really? Does the lipstick light up? Does it reflect your patent leather shoes?
It has a light on it. Aisha Davis is a 25-year-old woman, lives in Ashburn, and she has a hair salon, Ava Hart Hair Salon at 3643 West 83rd, but she also makes lipstick. And it was kind of an interesting business story. She spent $1,000 trying to make her own lipstick.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you an idea of if you want to start a product, it's not
going to
be cheap.
Hello, Maybelline.
Yeah, right. But she has not only created the actual lipstick, but what's special is the, I guess you could say, the tube or the container it comes in. It has a light on it and a mirror. And she said that women try to put lipstick on in the dark areas, you know, in a bar or something like that, doesn't have a lot of light. And this is the solution, evidently,
the solution
to a problem I didn't know existed.
All right. Well, because you're not wearing your lipstick today.
That's right.
If you would put
again
on your lipstick in the green room, which is what
dark.
It's there for.
It's too dark.
All right. Andrew Herman, thanks for bringing those stories forward to us. Where can we find more?
DNAinfo.com/Chicago.
Terrific. Thanks again for joining us.
All right.
Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink. You can find me on my website, thinkglink.com, and I've got a story up now, 7 quick and easy ways to save more money in just 1 hour. I swear, that's just not a scam. It's a real thing. I went through and looked at my 7 favorite things that I do, 7, because I have more than 7, of course, but one for each day of the week, and wanted to put up something that would be helpful for Money Smart Week. So we put it into the free weekly newsletter. We put it online. Just go click on it. It's on the homepage so that you can go and learn and do a little bit more about money. All of this in service for Money Smart Week. And our next guest, Tracy Frizzell, who's the executive director of the Economic Awareness Council, spends, I would say, most of her day. Is that what you do, Tracy? You spend most of your day
That's
working
correct.
On money and students and families and how you can help?
Absolutely, yes. Our organization serves tens of thousands of youth each year. Every day of the year, we're at pretty much every school day at any rate, we're out working with youth, helping them set financial goals and then learn the skills they need to meet those goals. In particular, this week for Money Smart Week, our busiest week of the year, of course.
Okay, so why are you so busy this week? What are you doing different?
Right. So this week we are partnering with the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago that coordinates Money Smart Week. There are hundreds of free classes going on through April 29th, all around the city, even around the country. We in particular have programming at the Museum of Science and Industry where we're helping youth learn about entrepreneurship. We have a program this evening, a free program from 5 to 7 p.m., or excuse me, 5:30 to 7 p.m. for the general public. A career panel. We have a number of business professionals that are going to be leading mock interviews with youth, helping them learn about what to do with their first paycheck, volunteers for DePaul University and the CFA Society. It is at the Harold Washington Library in the U Media Center.
Which is such a great place. I remember when it first opened and it was everybody's like, oh, there's great spaces for these kinds of events. And Money Smart Week has made great use of it. Let's talk a little bit more about kids and money, because the fact that you're helping 20 plus thousand kids a year is just amazing. And of course, their families get the benefit of that. One of the things that I hear as I talk to people about their money is that they say when they were growing up, they never learned anything and their own parents were just terrible role models for money. Why do you think so many people feel like they've never learned, as adults, never learned anything about money as kids? And how do you think that's changing?
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons that an event like Money Smart Week is so important, because, being a little older, when I was growing up, it was something that people were intimidated to talk about. It wasn't, thought to be appropriate to talk about, like to talk about. And really, that was very unfortunate, because, how are you going to learn skills? How are you going to pick up positive financial habits? Is by practicing them, by learning from, experience and the people around you. So, we find that many of the youth that we work with, they've never set a savings goal before. They've never opened a bank account. They might not even know basic terms like deposit and withdrawal. So it really, takes some work to help them feel comfortable with the mainstream financial system, to learn that they can be successful, which they really can, starting small with younger children, setting savings goals. They meet those, that gets them energized and excited, and then, they can move on to bigger things like saving for the long term or investing.
What do you find is the most successful way to engage kids? And what is the number one lesson you want them to learn?
Yeah, so the most successful way to involve kids, that's a great question, is anything active. So unfortunately, when we have had in past decades, traditional consumer ed financial literacy classes, often it was, kind of passively listening and just kind of treating it like any other topic at school. Whereas really, to build positive financial habits, you need a chance to actually do something. And it's so much more exciting for you. So whether that is maybe working with your children to select specific stocks or a mutual fund and to, follow those together, maybe even eventually invest in those together, whether it's setting a goal as a family or for them individually and then going to deposit funds at the bank and really celebrating that experience. Anything where they're actively involved is so much more effective. We have helped thousands of youth that are working, youth employees for One Summer Chicago, to set savings goals, to open bank accounts, and set up direct deposits for their first job. And to see them open their first bank account, their faces light up when they get to actually do something like that, and really be a part of the financial mainstream in the adult world. So anything active is really the number one suggestion that I would have, is to get the youth involved. And also, anything that teaches delayed gratification.
That's one of my favorite things, by the way.
Yes.
Delayed gratification. The idea that you don't need to have it today. You can wait for a week, wait for a month, and if you still absolutely have to have it, figure out a way to make it affordable.
Yes. And, there's so much research that's pointing to the fact that that is a critical factor in many, many life skills. Of course, finance, being one of them. And a lot of those behaviors are set when we're very young. So even if it's that the youth eventually spends their money on a fun thing that they've been working towards, to have to put that off, to have to work for it, to have to wait and be patient and then have that reward in the end is really something that they can, keep with them for their whole life, that experience and that habit and skill.
Let me tell you my favorite thing to do with my kids when they were young. Our local bank offered kind of youth savings programs, and you could go in and for every $100 you deposited, you got a free ice cream coupon. And we collected those things like crazy. I mean, the kids were optimizing it. They'd take their birthday money and divide it into different deposit amounts of like $101 as opposed to doing it all in a bigger lump sum so that they could get two of the ice cream coupons. And now it's funny because then they never redeemed them. And we just had a stack of like 40 or 50 of them. And now when they come home from college, they take their friends to go get ice cream. They're still honored at our local ice cream place. And so they go and they take their kids. But it was a great, help for them to understand that you're never going to get this kind of return on your money.
Absolutely.
I think each ice cream cone was like $7.
Yes, and that's funny. We did the exact same thing with my own children, and they had the same reaction once they got into delayed gratification and savings. They were afraid to send the coupons, so they wanted to keep them.
Yeah,
for,
they did.
A later date.
The other thing we did, which I think I'm sure you've probably got some parents who are doing this, is every time they made a deposit into their savings account, we would double it for them, but if they wanted to take money out for anything, we would take our share back. And sure enough, they just plowed money in. They never took it out. And here we are. They're in college and they have money to go and do things like study abroad and to go out on dates and do all the kinds of things that college kids like to do. So there are some great money lessons. Where can we find out more? Economiccouncil.org?
Yeah, so it's econcouncil.org. We'll tell you about all our classes and programs. So it's just all one word, econcouncil.org. And then for Money Smart Week, of course, it's moneysmartweek.org. There are hundreds of free events going on in Chicago right now, and lots of organizations that would be happy to have families come out and learn more about what to do to help their kids be money smart.
Terrific. Tracy Frizzell, your economic director of the Economic Awareness Council, executive director of the Economic Awareness Council, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's 12:52. I'm Elise Glink, Wintrust Business Lunch, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. You can find out more at thinkglink.com and at Glink. Follow me on Twitter. All right, we have Yun-Gun Chung with us today. He's the CEO of Focal Point Data Risk. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
Perfect. Thank you for being with us today. So you have just released the Cyber Balance Sheet Report. Tell me what that is.
Yeah, so the Cyber Balance Sheet Report was really designed to call into focus the disparity between what board members or corporate directors are looking for and their concerns from being able to manage risk and what security leaders are often reporting. And it really shows the lack of alignment in terms of expectation and communication barriers between both of those different roles inside of corporations.
So let's break that down a little bit, because it strikes me that chief security information officers and the cybersecurity experts, they should be talking to each other, right?
Yeah, so chief information security officers, as the leader of the cybersecurity function, is responsible for communicating the effectiveness of the security program up to senior executives as well as board members. But when board members are getting this information, it's often laced with a lot of industry jargon. It's not necessarily clear how effective a program is running. And so one of the corporate directors that we interviewed indicated that his concern was, no matter how much we seem to spend on a security program, it seems like nothing's going to prevent us from being breached.
Is that true? I mean, it does seem like we're getting more and more breaches and that companies' data is more at risk.
No question that that's the case, and the concerns are continuing to grow as the activity and frequency continues to hit the media. Breaches are a fact of life right now. We believe that what the focus should actually be is that instead of focusing on the breach, focusing on the negative impacts and mitigating the negative impacts associated with a breach. And so if you do happen to have an organization that's been hacked, how do you measure the damages? How many records are actually being lost or stolen or ransomed? You know, can you recover the business in a non-disruptive way? Are you doing the right thing by your employees, your customers, and your third-party vendors by making sure that everybody is coordinated? And that's really where we believe that the emphasis should be on is, if breaches are a fact of life, how do we mitigate the bad outcomes associated with those breaches?
Well, you hear oftentimes, you know, Target gets hacked and, you know, some phenomenal number of records, or even the government, federal government division gets hacked. And again, you know, all of the records are taken for different divisions of the government. It strikes me that companies are spending more and more here, but is there any amount of money that companies can spend on security, or should they just do, as you're suggesting, focus on making people whole or making the companies, their customers, whole at the other side of it? Where should the money be spent?
Yeah, so if you look at industry metrics on what organizations are spending on IT and on IT security, on average, an organization is spending about 10% of their corporate budgets on IT, and 10% of that IT budget is actually being spent on cybersecurity.
So what, roughly 1%?
Correct. And so if 1% of the total corporate spend is actually going towards IT security, what needs to happen is really a cost-benefit analysis. And the challenge that the industry has is being able to prove something that is a not negative. you know, how do I actually prove that if I spend a dollar that I'm actually going to get a dollar of value or a dollar of protection in return? And that's really one of the greatest challenges that corporate security officers have today.
Well, it seems as though there'll be plenty of risk that companies are taking going forward, and it sounds like there are not a lot of answers.
Yeah, there is a lot of risk that's being taken, and one of the challenges as it relates to data risk is that data is really invisible. It flows like water, and when you're managing your data well, that water is actually clean, it's organized, and when it's dirty, it leaks, and it makes a big mess all over the place when it actually spills. And so what organizations are trying to do is to actually practice good hygiene with that data in such a way so that you can minimize the impacts if and when a breach actually does occur. And so in a lot of ways, what our advice to our customers are is being able to manage your data no different than your mom told you how to clean your room. That way you can find stuff quickly.
Yun-Gun Chung, that is a very good way to put it. Thank you for being with us today in the Wintrust Business Lunch. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yun-Gun Chung is the CEO of Focal Point Data Risk, a cybersecurity management firm, and you can find out more online.